Okay, so we are holding on Ein Gimel Amud Beis, third line from the bottom. And we're in the middle of discussing the 39 Malachas. So we went through the first few of them, discussed a couple of toldos of them, and discussed about certain details we discussed basically certain toldos of them, and when they don't apply. Okay. So next we had the next ones in the Mishnah were Hazoda, Habor, Vatochen, Vamirakid, winnowing, picking out the toilets, grinding, and sifting. So the question is, Hainu Zoda, Hainu Bor, Hainu Merakid. Aren't all of those three things in effect the same thing? All of them involve you have something in the food that you don't want, so now you're getting rid of it. Okay, you're doing them in different ways, and you're doing them at different stages of the processing, but nevertheless, they all amount to the same thing. Why are they considered three separate Ovis Malachas? The answer is Abaya and Rava. Amitavayus, Abaya and Rava both say, Kol Milsa to have you the Mishkan, anything that was done in the Mishkan, Afagav the Ika, the Damula, even if you have something else which is similar, but was done at a different stage, Choshevla, then we still count it as an Av Malach. So since all three of those things had to be done in the Mishkan when they're preparing the dyes, and since they're not done in exactly the same way. Now yesterday, for example, we talked about, let's say, combing out flax. We said that was a tolda of the Malacha of Dush. Now they had to comb out flax in the Mishkan, of course, because some of the parts of the garments of the Kohenim and parts of the curtains and whatever were made out of linen. But nevertheless, combing out flax is done exactly the same way as threshing grain. Both of them, you're breaking open the shell to get what's inside. So therefore, they're not counted as separate ovos. But over here, each one of these is done in a different way because one of them is done by throwing it up in the air and letting the air carry away the tzolos. Another one is done by picking it out by hand or by using a keli for the purpose, as we're going to do a sieve, as we're going to discuss soon. And the third one is done using a sifter to sift flour. So therefore, each one counts as a separate admalacha. So the Gemara asks, the lech of nami koisish. Why don't we count also another stage that's involved in making bread? Another stage that's involved in making bread and also dye would be where you pound the seed in order to get off the shell of it. A wheat kernel, for example, and this is also true of certain kinds of materials that are used for dye, has a bunch of shells on top of it. So you have the outer shell is removed in the threshing process, and then you have the zolder process, the winnowing process, is you get rid of that. But then you have other shells that are more tightly attached, and those are not going to come off with processes like that. So the next thing usually you do with wheat for bread, for example, is you pound it in a mortar or something in order to loosen that second shell. And then you're going to be able to grind it up and get cleaner flour. So the question is, why don't we count that as a separate av malacha? Because again, it's not done in the same way as dosh. Dosh is done, for example, as we said yesterday, by having animals tread on the grain, or using a threshing sledge. We're being pulled by animals, whatever it is. Whereas kosish you're doing by pounding the wheat in a mortar or something. So why don't we count that as a separate? Why don't we count that as a separate malacha? The answer is, because it's not really an essential prerequisite for making bread. A poor person, for example, if he has to make bread for himself, he's not going to bother with the ketisha process. He's going to do all the other processes that we mentioned in the Mishnah, because ultimately he needs flour that's of decent enough quality for bread. But he's not going to bother with the kosish process. Okay, so he'll wind up with flour, he'll wind up with whole wheat or pumpernickel flour or whatever, and it'll have this inner shell mixed in. It'll have bits of this inner shell mixed in with it. It'll be whole wheat. Big deal. He doesn't have a problem with that. Therefore, kosish is not essential to making bread,
And therefore, applying that to dyes, the Tosfos says, therefore, that by the same thing, when it comes to making dyes, if a poor person is making dyes, he may also not bother with the kosher process. Okay, he could do kosher, and he's going to get a somewhat better quality product, but he being a poor person is not going to bother with that, and therefore, in other words, those are not considered, so therefore, it's not considered important enough to be, it's not considered an important enough thing that was done in the Mishkan to be counted as a malacha of its own. So that's according to Rabbi. So actually you have a bit of discussion over here, which is you have one way of understanding the way Rashi is saying, the way various Achronim understand Rashi is that if a person were to, what it is kosher would actually be considered a separate malacha, and that the only reason the Mishnah doesn't mention it is because not necessarily is it done, because the Mishnah is telling us the order in which people do malachas to bake bread, and not necessarily does that malacha have to be done. The other 11 malachas have to be done in order to bake bread, but this one, the 12th malacha, kosher, does not, and that's why the Mishnah is not listing it. It seems the way Rashi is implying, and you have Achronim who understand it that way, that actually Rashi actually uses the expression that it was done to the Mishkan, and it was an Av Malacha, which would in effect mean that if a person were to do Dosh and Kosish, he would actually be Chayav for two different Malachas, and he'd be bringing two different Chatois for it. So that's one way of explaining what Rashi is saying, that actually even though our Mishnah listed 39 malachas, in fact, there would actually be 40. Although, the Rosh Hash points out, we've already had several times in the Gemara, where Rabbi Yochanan says that the point of our Mishnah mentioning the number 39 is that's the maximum number of chatois you can bring. So then what good does it do to, if we're going to say that you bring a separate chatos for kosher as well as for dosh, Then you back up to 40. So then why? So in that case, why bechlal have the number? So anyway, that's one way of explaining what Rashi is saying. There are other ways. It could be that again, Tosfos mentions that even in the Mishkan, they may have done kosher, but they didn't have to. They could have gotten decent dyes without doing that. Therefore, they didn't necessarily have to do that. So therefore, it could be considered. Therefore, it doesn't necessarily have to be considered an av malacha. And you have other Rishonim that say Tosfos says as much, and you have other Rishonim who understand similarly. In a similar vein, that something that didn't necessarily have to be done is not something that's considered significant enough to be a malacha of its own, as opposed to all the other ones listed in the Mishnah are things that have to be done. Okay, anyway, that's a bias answer. Rava Mahamani Revi. Rava says, I can give you a different answer. Our Mishnah is going according to Revi. The Omar Ovis Malachas Avoyim Chosarachas. He says, he actually learns from a drosha of a pasuk, which we actually had that drosha earlier in our perek, where it says dvorim, where it says eila hadvorim, and the word dvorim means two, the hey means a third thing, and eila is gematria 36, so it equals 39. So according to him, there's an almost explicit thing in the pasuk that there were 39 malachas, and therefore the ichosh of kosish, if we were to list kosish as a malacha, habilei abayim, then you would have 40. And because of that, the Tana had to leave it out. According to that, the Tana had to leave it out, because otherwise you're going to have too many Ovis Malachas. The question is, if that's all it is, that we need a number of 39, then we just said before we have three Malachas having to do with Borer. We had Zora, Borer, and Merakid, winnowing, picking out, and sifting. And all three of them, we said, are essentially the same thing. And the only reason we're counting them as separate malachas is because all three of them were done in the Mishkan. They're done in different ways. If you're going to tell me that the only reason that kosher was in fact done in the Mishkan and that it had to be done, and the only reason we're not counting it is just in order not to go over the number 39, then let's take out one of those. The L'ayah Kosish and put in Kosish, and we still have 39. And in fact, it would kind of make better sense that way. Instead of having three malachas Instead of having three malachas that have to do with sifting, and only one that has to do with instead of having three malachas having to do with sifting, and only one having to do with removing it from its shell, we'll have two and two. The Gemara says you're right. So it's clear we have to answer. It's clear we can't use Rava's answer. We have to use Abaya's answer. That the reason why is because Kodesh itself is not necessarily always done, because a poor person, for example, might eat bread or might make dye or whatever without doing the process of Kodesh, and therefore it can't be considered really an essential prerequisite. Therefore it can't be considered something essential, and even when it comes to the Mishkan, not, maybe it was done, maybe it wasn't, but it wasn't something that had to be done. So now we're going to talk about the dinim of Borer. Tananabam, hoyu lefon of minei oichlin, if a person had in front of him types of food. Now, Rashi's girsa is exactly the same as you say of minei oichlin. Rashi specifically says, v'loi gosin and shnei, that we're not talking about there are two kinds of food. We're talking about, in other words, you have a kind of food in front of you where you have solus mixed in with it. So you have, let's say, for example, would be, let's say, that you cracked a bunch of nuts, and now you have sitting in front of you a mixture of nuts and nutshells, would be one example. Or you have many other examples, as which we often have in day-to-day life, involving burr, involving picking out solus from our food. The Rashi is going to say that our Gemara is going to begin by talking about that case, where you have one type of food, minei oichlin, this means one or another type of food, which contains tzolus. On the other hand, Tosfos accepts Rabbeinu Hananel's girsa, which is that in fact we have the word shnei. So what we're actually talking about over here is that you have two different kinds of food mixed together, and you want to eat only one of them, where there also the dinim of borer would apply. So if you had, so in other words, according to Rashi, if let's say you had in front of you a mixture, let's say you had a container of mixed nuts in front of you, and you wanted to eat, let's say, only the peanuts, then Rashi wouldn't consider that to be burr at all, because all of them are edible. Whereas only if you had, let's say, peanuts mixed with their shells, then Rashi would call that burr. Whereas according to Rabbeinu Hananel, according to Tosfos, even if you had, let's say, mixed nuts, and you only wanted to eat one kind of nut, then it still would be considered burr. What wouldn't be considered butter, according to that, would be if it's all one kind of food, and let's say, for example, you have larger ones and smaller ones, and you want only the larger ones, then fine. It says in Chokhadar, that's not called butter. So now let's figure out the dinim of butter in that connection. So butter ba'oichel, you're allowed to pick out and eat. Butter umaniach, you're also allowed to do butter and put it aside. We're going to explain the whole braisa, and we're going to have several different explanations in Amirayim what the braisa means and what the exact halachas are. And by the end of it, we'll have a better idea what the practical halachas in this connection are. So borer v'oichel, he's allowed to eat, he's allowed to do borer and eat. Borer maniach, he's allowed to do borer and set it aside for other people to eat. Actually, Tosfos says, l'fer hachedim, for other people. V'lo yivrer, but the braisa continues, but he cannot do borer, which seems to contradict what we just said. The imbirer chayev chasas, and if he did do borer, then he's chayev chasas. So that's thus far the braisa. So we have to figure, what is the braisa telling us? On the first it's saying that you're allowed to do borer, and then it's saying you're not allowed to do borer. So we're going to have five different answers of amiroin. So in my karma is the question. What is the braisa saying? Oma ula hochi karma. So ula says what the braisa is saying is as follows. Borer v'oichal l'boi b'yoyim. You're allowed to do borer where you're going to eat it sometime on that day, on Shabbat itself. You can also do borer and set it aside where you're not going to eat. So borer v'oichel would be where you're going to be eating it. You're going to be eating it sometime that day, sometime on Shabbos. Borer maniach would also be the same thing. You're allowed to do it sometime on Shabbos for later on, that other people should be able to eat it later on Shabbos. But ulamachar lo yivrer, you're not allowed to do borer where you're doing it for the sake of having it for tomorrow. And if you did do that, then you'd be chayiv chatos. So in other words, according to Ula, as long as you're doing it, for the purpose that you're going to be eating it on Shabbos, then Ula would say you'd be allowed to. You're just
tomorrow
not
meaning from tomorrow meaning from Friday to Shabbos, or means from Shabbos to Sunday.
No, you're allowed to do it on Friday. No, we mean from Shabbos to Sunday.
Oh.
If you have, let's say, for example, you have the nuts mixed in with their nutshells, let's say, and you're going to take out the nuts in order to set aside because you want to eat them on Sunday, then the Braisa would be saying it's also to do that, and you chayav chatos. But if you're picking it out on Shabbos itself, then Ula is saying the Braisa would be saying it's allowed. However, Rav Chisda asks on that, what do you mean? But why should Bura be different than any other malacha? Why should Bura be any different? That would be like saying that you're allowed to cook. That would be like saying that you're allowed to bake on Shabbos as long as you're going to be eating the bread. As long as you're going to be eating the bread later that day on Shabbos. Same thing with cooking. Obviously, that's not the case. So why should it be? With Bura that we make a distinction and say that Bura you're allowed to as long as you're doing it sometime on Shabbos? There's no logical reason to make such a distinction. Ela Omer of Chista. So Rav Chista says, okay, here's explanation number two. Bura v'oichel pochas nekashir. What you're allowed to do is you're allowed to do Bura of less than the shir. Bura, like most malachas involving food, the shear, as we learned earlier in the parak, is kegregeris, where a person does it, the amount, the volume of a dried fig, of a standard-sized fig that they had in those days. So you'd be allowed, so Rav Chisda is saying, you'd be allowed to do bura of less than that amount at a time, and you'd be allowed to do that where you're going to be eating it right away, and also bura maniach pachas mit the shear, the same way you could be doing it and setting it aside for somebody else to eat it, same thing. Pachas mekashir, because shir lo yivur. What you're not allowed to do is do it with a shir. You're not allowed to do a full kugagereth at a time. The yibiru chayiv chatos, and if you did, then you'd be chayiv chatos because now you've done a full malach of Shabbos. So you'd be allowed to do that. Now, usually you have, now in other words, your chista would say, usually when it comes to other malachas, you're not allowed to do them less than a shear either. But he would say, when it comes to bura, the Tosfos points out, both Ula and Rav Chisda would take the view for their respective things that when you're doing it, not both of them, sorry. Rav Chisda himself, when he asks the question, we said that Ula says you could do it for later that day. Rav Chisda doesn't accept that. But Rav Chisda says when you're doing less than a shear at a time, then that's the normal way of eating. I mean, when you're eating, you always have psoilus in there that you have to do something with. You have, for example, you eat watermelon, you have watermelon seeds, let's say, for example. You've got to do something with the psoilus. So therefore, Rav Chisda says that even though usually we wouldn't allow you to do less than a shear, but in this case, to do less than a shear would be derech achila, and it would be the normal way, and therefore it should be allowed. But maski for Rav Yosef, but Rav Yosef still says, I don't like that. Okay, very nice. You're saying it's less than a shear. But still, you could say the same thing about baking. The fact is, chatzi shear also min haTorah. That's according to Rav Yochanan. According to Rish Lakish, it's only dirabanan. Either way, it should be also to do that. So just like you're not allowed to bake less than a shear, why should you be allowed to do butter less than a shear? Okay, derech achila. So what? Elo, Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, here's what it is. Bura v'oichel b'yad. So now, up until now, all of the explanations that we have, two explanations that we have so far, are all saying that there are only two cases in the Braisa. There's a case that you're allowed to do, and there's a case that whether you're doing it for now, or you're doing it for later, or you're doing it for yourself or for other people, versus the kind of chayv chatos. Rav Yosef is going to explain that the Braisa is actually talking about three different cases. Bura v'oichel b'yad, bura maniach b'yad. What you're allowed to do, Rav Yosef says, is you're allowed to do bura as long as you're doing it by hand, and that you can do whether you're eating it yourself or whether you're doing it for other people, but only if you're doing it by hand. But the konon over tam choy lo yivra. However, you're not allowed to do the brera with a konon or tam choy. A konon, Rashi describes, is a wooden keli shaped kind of like a funnel. What you do is, let's say for example, so you might have an example, you're eating beans. So you have beans, you have beans or peas or things like that that are mixed with tzolos. You have them mixed with their shells or pods, let's say, that you don't want to eat. What you do is you put them in the konon, and you shake the konon, you swirl it around. What happens is because the kidneys, the beans, are round and smooth, so therefore they roll to the bottom, whereas the tzolos stays trapped and it stays caught on top. So it's not like we're not talking about a smooth-shaped funnel. We're not talking about a smooth-sided funnel. Obviously, everything would just go right through. Like we had in last week's cookie oven, mashkech, a funnel, where, you know, it takes one in a ear and it goes in one ear and out the other. A konon is shaped similar to a funnel, but it has, like, grooves or whatever in it where the beans will easily slide down to the bottom and fall out, whereas the toilet will get stuck in, will get stuck in the grooves or whatever. So therefore, sort of Yosef is saying, the Braisa is saying, you're not allowed to do that. Or with a tamchoi. A tamchoi is a large plate. And what you do is, if you're doing boro using a large plate, what you do is you put the whole mixture on there and you shake it gently. And then what happens is the heavier things, such as the beans, fall to the bottom, and the lighter things, the tzolos, stays closer to the top. So that you're not allowed to do. The birer potter avol oser. If you do that, then it's potter, because that's not the normal way of burr. The normal way of doing burr would be with a sieve or a sifter or something, which is the next case. So using a konon or a tamkoi is not the normal way of doing burr. The birer potter avol oser. So therefore, if you did it, it's potter, but it's still oser to do it, because oser lachatchila to do it, because it is, after all, somewhat similar. Reasonably similar to burr. So even when you're taking out the oichel and leaving behind the psoilus, then which is what we're talking about, all this kind, is would still be also drabanon. And then the third case of the braisa would be that you're not allowed to do brera using a sieve or sifter, which are the normal kalim that are used for their, which are the normal kalim that are used for this purpose. The imbirah chayv chatos, and if he does it, he's chayv chatos, because then he's chayv chatos, because then he's doing it, then he's doing the malacha in the normal way. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, in other words, Rabbi Yosef is saying, the Ramban explains that you're not going to have the braisa going from one extreme to another, first talking about things that you're mutter to do, and then talking about things that you're also to do, and even midaraisa and chayav chatos. There has to be some kind of middle thing. In general, whenever you have something which is mutter on Shabbos, you usually have gzeiras drabanan on it to make sure you don't do the wrong thing. So therefore, Rav Yosef says here the middle ground is the konon or the tamchoi. So that's what it is. So you're saying that there are three possibilities. You have by hand, or using a keli which is usable for the purpose but which is not the normal way to use, or using a keli which is the normal thing to use. And those would be the three things: mutter, also drabanan, or chayev chatos. Okay. However, masifar Rav Hamnuna, but still Rav Hamnuna says, I have a problem with that. Midri konon the tamchoi, the tamchoi katani. Okay, but does the braisa say anything about a konon or a tamchoi? A braisa, actually, Rashi says the braisa didn't mention any kaven. It didn't mention a konon or tamchoi. It also didn't mention a nafa or kvara. So where are you getting that the braisa should be telling you that one is also drabanan and the other one is also daraisa? Tosfos actually says that no. The Tosfos says the question is really only on the konon and the tamchoi. If you're telling me, if the braisa is already trying to get into the detail of what you're allowed to do versus what you're allowed to do completely versus what you're allowed to do, what you're also to do drabanan, then it should have mentioned at least the konon and the tamchoi, which you're also to do drabanan, in order to clarify that point for us. So it can't be, says Rav Hamnuna, that that's what the braisa is telling us. Because then it should have then as the expression goes, ikur chosim and asefer, an essential point is missing over here. Then you're left with you need an essential point. You need to know that difference between a different kind of kalim and the b'raita is not spelling it out. Okay, so fourth explanation, elo omer Rav Hamnona. What it means is like this: borer v'oichel mitoichat tzoros. It means when you're doing borer, you're allowed to pick out the good from the bad. So in our example with nuts and shells, let's say, for example, you'd be allowed to pick up the peanuts and leave the shells behind. So that you're allowed to do. The same thing, you're allowed to do that when you're doing it for other people to eat. But to do the other way around, to take the psolus out and leave the oichel behind, that you're not allowed to do, lo yivra, v'yibbiru, chayiv chatos, and if you do, then you're chayiv chatos. Okay, the problem with that is, maskis labaya, midi oichol b'tech p'solos, katani. Okay, but after all, the braita didn't mention anything about oichol b'tech p'solos either. So if you're going to tell me that the braita is making that distinction, then it has to say that distinction. Otherwise, you have all the different explanations that we tried already, which don't depend on that distinction, and we wouldn't have known that if it didn't tell us. Ela Omer Abaya, the Abaya says, here's explanation number 5. What it means is like this. Borer v'oichol l'alter, you're allowed to do borer and eat it, where you're doing it right away, where you're doing it in order to eat it right away. And also, you're also allowed to do it for the sake of other people to eat it right away, because when you're going to be eating it right away, meaning when you're going to be eating, you're preparing the meal, and then you're going to be sitting down to the meal now, then that's fine. But that's only where you're doing for yourself or for somebody else for right away. But where you're doing it for later on, where you're doing it for something that you're going to be doing, that you're going to be eating later that day, lo yiver, then you're not allowed to do borer. And even if you're doing oichol mitzeh tzolos, even if you're doing, you're taking out the good and leaving behind the bad, you're still not allowed to do that, even though it's oichol mitzeh tzolos. The imbirer, if you do it for the sake of eating it later that day, not it's a borer loiter, then it's the equivalent of as if you're doing it in order to store it away, and then you'd be chayiv chatos. So as long as you're not doing it for something that you're going to be eating right away, then as long as you're not going to be doing it for something where you're going to be eating right away, then it would be also to do. So when we say right away, what we mean is that you're going to be sitting down to the meal now. So then it's allowed, even if the particular thing you did burger for, let's say you're only going to be eating it for dessert. You're only going to be eating it a long time from now, but fine. It's all within the same meal, so therefore that's allowed. But not for later on, basically. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about oichol and tzolos. And according to Rabbeinu Hananel and Tosfos, we're talking about even if it's two different kinds of oichel, but you only want to eat one of them. Tosfos summarizes that we still do to a certain extent accept Rav Hamnuna's distinction. We do to a certain extent accept Rav Yosef's distinction between whether you're doing it by hand or whether you're doing it with a keli. We do also accept the distinction that Rav Hamnuna made about oichol mitzeh tzolos and tzolos mitzeh oichol. And we do also accept what Abaya is saying about la'alter. So you actually need all three criteria. So you need that you're doing it by hand. You're taking oichol out from the tzolos. And you're doing it for right away, so that's the halacha. And it has to be la'alter means because you're going to be eating it right now, or at least for the meal that you're going to be eating right now. So you prepare it right before the meal. Ellie, you were asking yesterday about taking off chicken skin. It turns out that actually it is allowed, although there is a bit of a machlokas of achronim about whether it is considered burr. Basically, the question is it considered burr or not? Or actually, it's not really considered. So what it is like this. It's not necessarily considered burr per se. Because many people do eat the skin, so it might not be considered burr at all. If anything, it might be a malacha of dosh. But you're definitely allowed to do it right before you eat it. So if it's on your plate and you're taking off the skin, there's no question you're allowed to do it.
How about separating the bones from the chicken? Like for my son, I don't want to have the skin, and then I'll also take out the bones. So he doesn't know.
Right. So then, well, so obviously, therefore, you're right. Nobody eats the bones. Okay, but nevertheless, though, you would definitely be allowed to remove it right before you eat.
It's on your plate already. Okay.
Yeah, let's say it's on your plate, you're preparing the meal. Let's say you're about to sit down to the meal. So that you would be allowed to do, but to do it earlier, maybe you would be allowed to. Maybe I mean, in the case of bones, I guess there's more reason to say you wouldn't, because yeah, the bones are definitely not something you can eat. The skin you have post skin will say you would be allowed to even earlier. Okay. Continuing on this topic of burger. Another bride says, "Hoyu lefon of shnei mina ufrin." If a person has in front of him two kinds of food. Now, according to Rashi, Rashi before said that the previous bride was talking about one kind of food mixed with tzolos. Here we're talking about two different kinds of food. Ubiruv ochal ubiruv hiniach. And he does burr and he eats some of it, or he does burr and sets it aside for somebody else to eat. Rav Ashi masni potu, Rav Yimim Gifni masni chayav. So Rav Ashi learns that he's potu because it's two different kinds of food. Rav Yimim Gifni says he's chayav. So Rav Ashi masni potu. So what do you mean Rav Ashi says he's potu? Batoni chayav chatos. The previous braita said that he's chayav chatos. And when the fact that Rav Ashi uses the expression potter implies that it's still osur. Otherwise, Rav Ashi would have said the expression mutter. The answer is, again, like Kasha, hob konin batam, ho yi hob not ol kabara. It depends. Rav Ashi is talking about, again, where you're using a konin or tamkoi, this funnel-shaped thing or a lard plate, where it's osur to do it l'hatchila, but it's osur to do it midrabbanon, but if he does it, then he's potter. But with a nafo kvara, then he'd be chayv chatos because that's the normal way of doing it. So in other words, this braita would basically be saying the same as the previous one. Tosfos discusses if we're going to say we said before that the previous braita said that you're not allowed to do it with a nafo kvara. So that seems to imply that was only when you're doing it for later that day. That seems to imply, the way Rashi is saying, that if you were to do it with a nafo kvara, it would be allowed as long as you're doing it in order to eat right on the spot. But Tosfos says, how is that possible? You can't use a nafo kvara even if you're doing it right away. So therefore, Tosfos says that this previous braita and this one are actually talking about two different cases. The previous one is talking about where he's doing it by hand. Here we're saying that he's doing it with a nafo kvara, and we're saying he's chayev chatos, even if he does it right away. So in other words, again, according to Rashi, if we were to say the two braitas are saying the same thing, when we would say that we'd be saying that as long as you're doing it la'alter, then it's mutter. And Tosfos says, obviously, that can't be the case. So therefore, it has to be that we're talking about that you're doing it with a, if you do it with enough okvara, you're always chayev, even if you're doing it malter, and it's only mutter if you're doing it, but it's only mutter if you're doing it malter by hand. That was what we said before. That Tosfos says you need all three criteria. You need it has to be by hand, and malter, and that you're taking the oichol from the solus. Okay. Another thing in that connection, the author of Dini, when Rav Dini came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, Omar, he told something that happened like this. One Shabbos, it was Rav Divi's turn to be the waiter for the Talmidim. So the Talmidim used to eat in the Mishmeresh, and you had, there were shifts. They took turns. Each Talmid had a designated time when it was his turn to be the waiter. So this time, on one particular Shabbos, it was Rav Divi's turn. The Iklu Rav Ami and Rav Asi. Rav Ami and Rav Asi visited the yeshiva over there. So Rav Divi emptied out onto the table in front of them a basket full of fruit. So in other words, you had, now these fruits had leaves attached to them. So he didn't want to take off the leaves from the fruit and then put a fruit in front of everybody. He just emptied it out onto the table, and in the course of emptying it out, the leaves fell off the fruit on their own. And then everybody can take and eat. The lawyer diner, sort of Jimmy says, I saw that happen, but I don't know. Is it because Rav Divi actually holds that it would be also even to take oichol from tefillas? Because in other words, after all, what could he have done over here? He could have taken out the fruit from among the leaves and left the leaves behind. That would be oichol mitzvah service, and it is la'alter, because the Talmidim and Rav Ami and Rav Asi are going to be eating it right away, and it is by hand. So is it maybe that Rav Divi... wanted to do it that way and make the leaves fall off on their own in order that neither he nor any of the Talmidim are going to be over on the Issur of Boder. Is it just because he wanted to make it look nice? He wanted to show, look how much fruit there is. You can take as much as you want. I don't just have to put one fruit in front of every person. So that's how Rashi understands the situation that Rabbi may have thought that you're not allowed to take even oichol mitzvah service. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos learns differently. Is it maybe that the reason why the Bibi didn't do the boder, take off the leaves ahead of time, is because it would be because then it would be before then it would be before then it would be too long before the meal? So is it that he didn't do that because that would be too long before the meal and therefore it would be usur? So therefore, what he could have done, conceivably, he could have brought the basket, and then each person would pick out a fruit and take the fruit out of the leaves and eat it. He could have done that, but he did. But he didn't want to do that. He could have picked off the leaves right in front of them, but he didn't want to do that in order not to make them wait. So therefore, maybe for that reason, he threw it on the table and let the leaves fall off on their own. Was it that, or was it just he did it because of Ayin Yopa, and in that case, you can't learn from that any implication as far as Hilchos Shabbos? Okay. Again, the bottom line is, we said you have the three criteria that we said before. As long as you're doing it by hand, and you're taking the oichol and leaving the solus behind, and you're doing it la'alter, you're doing it for right away, where you're going to be eating the meal very shortly, then it's mutter. And if any of those three criteria are missing, then it's also. Okay. Another din in this connection, Chizki Omar, Haburda Turmasim, it's a tzolos shalahan chayim. If a person picks out turmasim, which is a type of beans, from their tzolos, then he's chayim chasas. Now, even though you would think the beans themselves are the food, the psoilus is the psoilus, so what's the problem? So you're going to tell me then that Chizkiya disagrees with everything we've been saying all this time and saying that's also even to pick out the food from the psoilus. And obviously, Chizkiya is not just talking about where you're doing it for later that day, because then there's no particular chiddush in it. We already knew that. So the answer is, the Gemara says shiny turmasim. The difference is, Rav Chisda is talking about turmasim, which is a special case. Eshalpi le shiva zim. Turmasim are very bitter, and you have to cook them 7 times in order to make them sweet enough, in order to make them edible. So you have to cook them 7 times, and then after you cook them 7 times, the eloi shakli le masra. If you don't then immediately after you, very shortly after you cook them, if you don't take out the turmus beans from among the shells, then they get spoiled. They spoil very quickly because they've been cooked so many times that they're very, very soft. So therefore, now at this point, when you take out the turmus in themselves, when they're mixed in with the shells, then ukapsolus potatoichodami, so therefore it's the equivalent of taking psolus out of the food. So like this, in other words, the fact that they're gonna get spoiled, if it stays with the psolus, then in that case, in other words, it's considered then taking it out is also considered oichomatech. In a normal case, you have, let's say, nuts mixed with nutshells. The them being mixed together is not going to cause nuts to deteriorate. Therefore, there's no problem. The nuts are definitely oichel. The shells are definitely soilless. And therefore, you're allowed to do that. But over here, where the turmus in themselves are going to get softened and wound by being together with the soilless, then taking them out is considered oichel metech soilless. Is considered soilless metech oichel. That's the first explanation. Rashi actually has 3 different explanations over here. The first one is what we just said, based on the girsa that we had over here, where the word is shakli. Shakli means to take. Now you have a different girsa. You have a different girsa which Rashi brings, and then Hagoyt Habach also brings it, that the word is not shakli to take, but rather shalpi to cook. So Rashi gives a second explanation. It means like this. You have turmasin, again, turmasin has to be cooked 7 times, but you don't always have that every turmus needs to be cooked 7 times. Some of them you can get away with 2 or 3 times. So what do? You start by cooking them. You cook them a couple of times. What you do is you cook them a couple of times. Each time you pour out the liquid that they were cooked in, and then you put in more. Each time you're pouring it out, you take out the ones that are bad quality, the ones that have the ones that have worms in them or whatever. And then you keep on doing that. After every cooking, you take out the bad ones, and each time you're left with only the good ones, the really good ones, and those you keep on cooking again and again. So therefore, if you don't continue cooking it, then masrach is going to spoil. So in other words, what happens is, once you cook them 2 or 3 times, if you were to stop cooking them, then they would get wound. So now you're taking them out, already some of them are edible at that point, as opposed to the good ones are going to spoil if you don't keep cooking them. So therefore, in other words, the good ones, the ones that you're going to have to continue cooking, are considered soilless. The bad ones are considered the food. So if you were to be taking out the good ones from the bad ones, or for that matter, the bad ones from the good ones, either way, each one is considered soilless relative to the other one, because the bad ones are soilless relative to the good ones, the Ritva says, because after all, they're bad. They're not such good quality ones. On the other hand, the good ones are soilless compared to the bad ones because they're not edible yet. They're going to take more cooking. So therefore, that's Chizkiah's point, therefore, that you'd be also to do that. So that's Rashi's second explanation. Then Rashi says a third explanation, going back to Shakli, which means taking, but that the Gersa is, that the word is, the Ishkili lay, if you were to pick, not the Eloi Shakli lay, but rather the Ishakli lay, if they do pick up the turmasin. The third explanation, Rashi says, is the turmasin at this point, having been cooked, are so soft that if you pick them up with your fingers, then they become disgusting. They get smooshed between your fingers and you can't really eat them. So therefore, when you pick them up, then they become soilless. And then whatever's left is oichel until you pick that up. So that's the third explanation, is why picking out the cooked turmasin would be considered burif, soilless, metech oichel, because whichever ones you pick up become at that point soilless because they get squashed between your fingers.
Is this what he served the his friends shot by the table?
What we served where?
No, this is what he served his colleagues by when he was
previous thing we had Ravivi brought a basket of fruit and poured all the fruit onto the table in order that the leaves should come off. Now Chizki is talking about a case involving turmus beans.
Oh, two different things, okay.
Two different things, yes. Where again these turmus beans have to be cooked many times in order to make them edible. You have, by the way, the Gemara in Beista that mentions something involving the turmus beans over there that says that you have a Gemara over there you have a pasuk where the pasuk mentions at one point during the period of the Shoftim. We know that there were many times during the period of the Shoftim when the Jewish people worshipped Avodah Zarah, and there was one time when it mentioned seven different Avodah Zarahs that they worshipped, and then it says they didn't serve Hashem. So the pasuk says that actually looks at you see that the Jewish people didn't even treat Hashem like a turmos, where at least you cook it seven times and then you eat it. So like, so to speak, they worshipped seven different Avodah Zarahs and they weren't willing to worship Hashem. So the Gemara mentions in that connection, therefore, the fact that there exists a turmus bean, makes it that the people who are reshoyim and worship Avodah Zarah, who do Averis again and again, and until Hashem has to punish them over and over, and they still don't learn their lesson, they should learn a lesson from the turmus bean, where at least it gets cooked seven times, and then it's edible.
Yeah. Now, with regard to what he served his colleagues, Ravina, so it was definitely his kavana was to pour out the fruit this way the leaves will come off, or they weren't sure that's what his kavana is.
No, well we're saying in the Gemara we're not sure what his kavana was, but definitely when he did that, when he poured them onto the table, the leaves did come off. Yeah, so you're allowed to do that. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, the Moshe mentions in one of his Trubas a practical thing in that connection. What if you have, let's say, for example, you take a whole bunch of mixed, mixed silverware, let's say, from the dish rack or something, or from the drawer, and you're putting it on the table, and you need to be able to, the din of a burr apply to such things as well. For example, if you have a bunch of jumbled silverware together on the table, and you want to pick out, let's say, only the forks in order to be able to set them, then you'd also have a problem of butter unless you're doing it where you're going to be eating right away. So the Moshe says, well, what you can do is similar to what Ravivi did over here with the fruit. Throw it all onto the table, let it fall apart on its own, and then there's no butter. Okay. Moving on. The Mishnah had said the next malacha is batochen, is grinding. So let's have some dinim in that connection. Amar Papa, Chai man dekorin silka, if a person cuts beets very small, chayev mishem toichen, then he's chayev for the malacha of toichen, because that's effectively what toichen is cutting up things very small. Now, you have a number of rishonim who say, Tosfos mentions it over here, that Amram seems to say something similarly, that we're talking about only when you're talking about something like beets, for example, where you can't eat them raw. So if we were talking about, let's say, a tomato or a cucumber or something which you could eat raw, then there would be no problem even if you're cutting it very small. So there is you do have that opinion. On the other hand, you have a different explanation that no, we're not just talking about beets or things like that. We're talking even things that are edible as is, but you're cutting them very small. So according to that, it would apply to any kind of vegetable, even if you're just going to eat them. So for example, you're allowed to do it in order to eat it la'alter, just like we said before with burr. In fact, the Rashba uses an expression. I mean, listen, you know, the Chachamim are not asking a person to eat his food in small pieces. So you're allowed to do that. But nevertheless, for example, when you're making a salad, therefore you shouldn't cut
the pieces really, really small, because then you have a problem of toichen. So therefore, you cut them a little bit larger. And so in Shulchan Aruch, that was never mentioned. That, for example, you have people who have the minhag to cut up radishes or onions or whatever very small, into very, very small pieces. So okay, they have what to rely on, because again, you have the opinion that we said before that you're allowed if the food is edible as it is, you're not doing it in order to cook it. But nevertheless, of course, you'd still have to do like you did with burr and do it right before the soda. But this is why, for example, you'll find when people make Israeli salad on Shabbos, they don't cut it into they don't cut the vegetables into such small pieces as they might on weekdays. Okay. Amr of Menashe, another din in this connection, and Menashe says, "Haimad the solis silky, a person who cuts up." A piece of wood into smaller pieces in order to make for firewood, because smaller pieces burn more easily. Chayev, there's some toichen, then he's also chayev on the malacha of toichen, because again, grinding. Amar of Ashi, ikopid, amishchosa, and Rav Ashi says also, if he's doing them in an exact size, so he's cutting them to an exact size, chayev mishum machatech. Then in addition, he's also chayev for the malacha of machatech, which we had later on in the Mishnah, the malacha we said in the case of a skin, cutting leather to an exact size to make something out of it. So the same thing over here, he's cutting the pieces of wood to the exact size, and therefore that would be that malacha as well. Okay, you have a couple of other explanations of what solid silky means. Another one is it means there's certain kinds of palm trees where when you break apart the wood of the palm tree, there comes out sort of a powder that's inside there. So therefore, that would be considered toichen, although the Me'iri says, I don't like that explanation, because toichen is you're taking something and grinding it up. Here, that powder was in there all along. It's like the powder that you sometimes find on the lovin or whatever. Anyway, so a person does that, he's chai for toichen, and Rav Ashi says if he cuts it to an exact size, he's also chai for machat. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said halosh v'ha'oifer. We said kneading and baking, or the last two malachas involving, or the last two malachas in that step. So the question is, Amar Papa, shavak tani vidan bishul samonin dehav of Mishkan v'nokat oifer. Why is our Tana abandoning the matter of cooking dyes, which after all, in the Mishkan, again, they didn't have to bake bread for the making of the Mishkan? You have lechem aponim, but that's not part of the structure of the Mishkan, or part of one of the things that they needed. What they needed for the structure of the Mishkan was dyes, to dye the various curtains and whatever. And for that you don't bake. For that you cook. So why is the Tana of the Mishnah abandoning that and talking about oifer? We're talking about baking, which applies to bread. The answer is Tana Didan Sidura the Pas Noka, because the Tana of our Mishnah wants to go according to the order of baking bread, because after all, baking bread is much more common than making dyes, and therefore he's choosing to list the malachas in a way that has to do with baking bread. So it's true, it wouldn't be an av malacha if we didn't have something similar to it that was done in the Mishkan, and we do. We have the malacha of Mavasho, which is basically the same as oifer. We have a bit of discussion. Is it therefore that oifer is a tolda of mevashel, which would be a napkin in every person who would have baked on Shabbos? They would have to tell him you're being over on the malacha of mevashel, or is it that they're considered parallel of its malachas? The way that Amram says it, me'ein malacha achas, and therefore you could tell him oifer, or you could tell him mevashel. Whatever it is, the point is the Mishnah is using sidur of the path, the order of making bread, and therefore. So therefore, instead of mentioning cooking, it mentions baking. But yes, both of them would be equally awesome. So in this connection, Amar of Acha Bar Avira, Hai Man the Shoda Six Alatuna. If a person takes a peg, a wooden peg, and puts a person takes a wooden peg and puts it into an oven, where what happens is you put it into the oven not in order to burn it, but in order to strengthen it, in order to harden it. Like this, a wooden peg was cut out from a piece of wood, and the wood, when you cut it out from there, the wood was still soft, it had water in it. you put the peg into the oven in order to make the water evaporate out of it and make it stronger. So you do that chayiv b'shul mevashel. He chayiv for the malacha of mevashel. Obviously, anything you're putting into the oven in order to harden it would be a malacha. The answer is ma detema l'sharuri kamachaben, because you would think that made l'sharuri mona kamachaben. You would think essentially what he's doing, he just wants to make it stronger. Now, really, in other words, cooking generally involves. That you're softening something. You have, for example, meat. Let's say it was hard, or it was tough, and you're cooking it in order to soften it. Over here, you're not really doing that. Here, you're doing it in order to strengthen it, in order to make it harder. So maybe that shouldn't be considered. Maybe that shouldn't be considered mevashel. Kamash
Mulan. On the other hand, this is Makkah of a Patish. He's actually finishing off the kiddi by making it hard. That's when it serves its purpose.
That's a good point, although I guess maybe the answer is it is usable without this. I mean, you could still knock it into the ground. It'll still serve its function. You just want to make it harder. So that wouldn't necessarily be makom hapatish. But you're right. Maybe we're only focusing now on mevashel, and we're not focusing on whether it would also be makom hapatish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, so you would think maybe he's only coming to harden it, and therefore it shouldn't be considered bishul. Kamash molan, the mirfa rafi v'hoder kamit. Therefore, if Acha Bar Avida wants us to realize, when you put the peg in the oven, what happens is first it softens, and then after the water evaporates, then it hardens. So that initial softening is considered bishul, and therefore it would be chayiv chamdas. Another way of explaining it, actually, that Amnon learns, that bishul applies whether you're making something hard, soft, or whether you have. There's certain kinds of cooking where you make something soft, hard, right? You cook an egg, it goes from being soft and it becomes hard. And either one is considered mevashel. So the Gemara is saying over here that you would think that maybe only if you have something that was soft and you're cooking it and making it hard, like an egg, then you'd be chayiv. But here the peg was already hard, you're just making it harder. Maybe it's not considered. So Rav Acha Bar Avida tells us that no, because after all, it softens in between. So therefore, you actually have something which is you're making something softer, harder, because in the process of being in the oven, it softens for a while in the middle. Okay. Next, another din. Amar Rav Bar Avuna, Haiman de Artach Kufra. If a person boils tar on Shabbos, heats up tar. Chayev b'shul mevashel, then also he's chayev for the malacha of mevashel. So the Gemara says again, pshita. Obviously, tar is no different than anything else. The answer is ma'ud etem akim dehodav ikusha. You would think yes, but afterwards, what happens after you melt the tar? Later on, if you leave it to sit for a while, then it becomes hard again. So therefore, aim aloy. So maybe it's not considered mevashel. Maybe mevashel only is when you're doing. Maybe when you're making a permanent change to the thing. Kamash Mulan, therefore he wants us to know that not, it's still considered a malach. an egg lay towel is a section of Avnei Nezer from the famous Avnei Nezer, the Sefer Shavu Rebbe, the section on it, on the details of Malachas of Shabbos, called Egg Lay Towel, and he explains like this. Usually you have, in order for something to be considered a malacha, it has to be something that will be long-lasting. For example, let's say, we're going to say on the bottom of the omid, let's say that if you just make two stitches, but you don't tie the ends of the thread, then it's not considered a malacha, that it'd be chayiv on for Shabbos, because it's not going to last. The thread is going to pull right out. But over here, so you would think over here it would be the same thing also, because the tar is going to solidify again. But nevertheless, the fact is, in the Mishkan, they did something similar with metal. You melt metal in order to make something, and then afterwards the metal hardens again and goes back to the same state it was before, and it's still considered a malacha. So we see that there are certain malachas where it doesn't matter even if it goes back to the original state.
It would be similar to a chocolate icing on a cake. You know, a chocolate icing, you make it melted, you pour the ice,
yeah.
You pour it on, you wait, you pull it dry as dust, it turns out again.
Yeah, of course. I mean, an example would also be water. After you boil water, after you boil water and it cools down, it's not any different than it was before. Yeah. So all these cases, you'd still be high again. Okay. Omar Rabba. So now Rabba says, let me give you an example where a person can be doing many malachas at one time. Haiman de Ovid Chavisa. If a person on Shabbos makes a barrel out of clay, chayev mishum sheva chatoris, he's going to be chayev for seven chatoris. Again, obviously where he knew it was Shabbos, but he didn't know these malachas are also, which is the case we had in the first Mishnah of our parak, where then he's bringing a separate chatas for each malacha. What are the seven chatoris? Rashi describes like this. Number one, you have, he grinds up the clods of dirt that he's going to be using for his clay. That's toichin. Number two, he picks out the rocks from among them. So that's burr. Then he sifts them to get out any smaller rocks or whatever that's in there. That's merakid. Then he kneads it. That's losh. He smooths it when he's making the shape of the keli. That's memareach, memachik, memareach, whatever. Like smoothing out leather. Mavir, when he lights the fire to fire the keli. So that's lighting the fire. And then he puts the keli in there, and that's mavashal. Rashi points out he's not going to be chayef for the malacha, or he's not going to be chayef for the malacha of choifer, which is a tolder of chodesh, which is digging. He's not going to be chayef for that, because we said yesterday that if you make a hole in the ground, where the purpose of it is, because you need the dirt, then you're potter for that, because we said that would be considered makalka, making the hole itself is considered is ruining the ground. Rashi also points out he's not going to be chayiv for boina, because Rashi says the malacha of boina, of building, only applies to structures; it doesn't apply to kelim. Although Tosfos asks about that, Tosfos brings here and elsewhere in the Masechta that there are actually kelim, there are actually cases where if a person is making a whole new keli, he can be chayiv for boina. Okay. Anyway, continues Rava. And if a person were to make an oven, a clay oven on Shabbos, then he would be chayav 8 chatois. The seven that we said so far, because the same seven processes that he does in order to make a barrel, he also does in order to make an oven. And then you have at the end, after he finished firing it, then what he does is he smears clay on it in order to help it retain its heat. And that's the Gemar Malacha, and that's Makam Vatish. As opposed to, Rashi says, when it comes to the barrel, there's no machzor patish, because once it finishes baking in the oven, then already that's that. It's done, and you don't need to do anything else, so there's no specific action that you're doing for machzor patish. Maybe also, Ellie, that might also answer what you were asking before about the peg, because, same thing. You put the peg in the oven. It gets hardened there in the oven. There's no separate maaseh that you're doing to finish it off. Machzor patish would only be if there's no other, if you're doing a particular mice in order to finish it off that wasn't under any of the other malachas.
Yeah, like a final bang. Okay.
Right. Amar Abayas, here's another one. Haiman de Ovid Chalsa, if a person makes a round basket on Shabbos out of reeds, Chayiv Achas Esrei Chatois, then it's going to be Chayiv 11 Chatois. What are the 11? So you have like this. Rashi starts off. He starts by cutting the reeds that he needs, so that's Toitzer. He's also chayev because of Neteya, because he said yesterday there are certain kinds of plants where when you trim them, when you trim branches or whatever off them, then it makes them grow better. Reeds, bamboo or whatever are one of those kinds of things. So therefore he's already chayev two things, one for harvesting and one for planting. He gathers them together, that's the malacha of Ma'amer. He picks out the ones that he needs, that's Borer. He smooths them, that's Mamachet. He cuts them into smaller strips because, like you have, some of them are too big to be used to be used for the basket by themselves. So he cuts them into smaller strips. So that is toichin because, again, we said he's making them into smaller pieces. Then he cuts each one. That's when he cuts them widthwise. So he's toichin. Then he's cutting them lengthwise to make them to the size that he needs for the basket. That's mechatech. He's cutting them to size. Then he sets up the shesi thread, which is mesach. So we talked yesterday about the way it works. When you're weaving cloth, where you set up the shesi threads, you have a malacha of mesach, which is setting up a loom, where you set up the shesi threads parallel to each other, and then you have oisa botinir, and it's putting them through the loops over there. So here you have something similar. When it comes to making a basket, you start with the bottom of the basket, which is round, and what you do is you start by setting out a bunch of straight sticks in like a star-shaped pattern. That's the equivalent of setting out the shesi. So So that would be Mesach. Then what you do is, the next thing you do is, in order to hold those ones, in order to hold those in place, the ones that are sticking out in all directions, you take two reeds and weave them back and forth between them. You take one of them and it goes under and over and under and over them, and another one right next to that, and those two are twirled together, and therefore that's the equivalent of the nirin, that's the equivalent of the loops that you have in a loom to be able to hold to be able to hold everything together. So therefore, so now you've done so that's oisa shnei batei nirin. Then you do the rest of the weaving. You do the rest of the putting the reeds in a circular pattern around and around that original base. So that's oreg, that's weaving. And then when you're done, you finish weaving and you cut off the end. Then it's makor hapatish. So therefore you've got 11 melachos. The e chayte lepume. And if on top of that also, once you finish, you sew up the top end of the basket to make a smooth top. Then chayev shloishes chatoes. Then he's chayev 13 chatoes, because we have he's sewing and he's also tying off the thread at the end. So therefore 13 melachos. Again, no boina because ain't binyan b'kelim. Rashi also points out you can't say when he takes off the outer layer of the reeds in order to use them, you can't say that that's considered machshit like you do with an animal, because machshit only applies to animal skins. Then Rashi also mentions maybe also you make holes in them and maybe that's toichin, because when you make a hole you're causing sawdust, but Rashi says that that's malacha shein etzricha legufa. Next. Amar Rav Rav Chana Amar Rav Yechon. So now let's talk about the next melachos that we had in the Mishnah were the ones that had to do with weaving, and we said one of the melachos there was, so we're not going through them one by one like we did with these other ones, maybe the pashtus, because the Mishnayos are going to go through them in more detail later on in Amasechta. Anyway, so but one that we'll focus on is toiva, which is spinning thread. If a person spins the wool while it's still on the animal's back on Shabbos, chayev shalosh chatoz, then he's going to be chayev three chatoz. Achas mishum gozes, one because he's shearing it, va'achas mishum menafes, one because he's combing it, va'achas mishum tova, and one because he's spinning it. So when we're saying over here that he cuts it, one explanation is because in the process of doing this, he's going to be pulling it out. He's going to be pulling it out from the animal, and therefore it would be considered goyzes. Rav Kahana, Omer, Rav Kahana says no, he's not going to be chayy for that. Ein derech gizah b'kach, ve'ein derech menafes b'kach, ve'ein derech tzvi b'kach. It's not the normal way to pull. It's not the normal way to get the wool off the animal like that, by pulling it off, and also only then do you comb it and spin it. So therefore, so that's not considered the normal way of doing the malacha. So it's all shaloi kadavka, it's all kalachayad, and therefore you can't call that he did those malachas on a daraisa level. It's going to be also to do it, but rabbanon. But it's not going to be something that he's going to be chayev chatos for.
The question is by Mishkan, that's how he did it.
Right, so the loy, why not? We learn in a bright in the name of Reb Nechemya that when the pasuk says tovu esayizim, that the women over there spun the goats, that means shot up the izim with tovu beizim. They washed the hair while it was on the goat, and they spun it while it was still on the goat. Alma tviya al gavi behema shma tviya. So we see that spinning wool or hair or whatever while it's on the animal is still considered spinning. The answer is chokhmah. You say it's shiny. It's different when it's done with exceptional chokhmah. Most people don't do that, and most people don't know how to do that. So therefore, a regular person who does that is doing kala'acho yad, and therefore you can't be botladaitim, as Tosfos says, botladaitim, eto kaladim, and therefore you can't be mechayim for that. You have the Eglay Powell says that maybe, yeah, if you have one of these women, if she were to do it, then she'd be chayiv chatos for it if she did it on Shabbos, because she's an expert at knowing how to do it. But a regular person, no. By the way, you have the question, why Taka did they do it that way? So this is the Sfona, and the Pasuk says, because this way, the explains that this way the hair is much more shiny and lustrous when it's so attached to the animal than afterwards. They wanted that the hair should be in the best possible quality when they spin it, and therefore they spun it while it was still on the goat. There's a Sicha in Chavis Kazayin where the Rebbe expands on that point and talks about, aside from that, first of all, we see from that a point about what it means to make a mitzvah in the best possible way, but the Rebbe also discusses the idea that this way also they wanted that they're doing for the Mishkan should be on as high as a level as possible in the four things. We have Doimim Tameh Chai Medaber. If the wool was taken off the goat, then already in effect it's Doimim. I mean, it comes from a Chai, of course, but right now it's not. So therefore, they wanted to do it after while it's still on the back of the animal, and this way it's still Chai, and this way they're doing the Malacha. They're not doing Malachas for the Mishkan, not just with the Doimim, but also with the Chai. Not just with the Doimim and the Tameach, but also with the Chai. Now let's talk about more examples where a person might do the various processes to prepare something, and he's going to be doing multiple malachas in that connection. If a person pulls off a feather from a bird, and then he cuts down the end of it. Now what you have is, you have the think of the smaller feathers that grow on a bird. You have those smaller feathers, every feather has a spine that runs down the middle of it. But let's say, for example, you want to use the feathers as pillow stuffing. You don't want those sharp ends on them because they're going to stick out through the pillow. So you cut them off. So that's a separate malacha. And then what you do is you pull off the fluffy stuff over there from that spine. I'm even gonna throw away the spine and just use the fluff. Chayev shalosh chatos, so it's chayev three chatos, because pulling the feather off the bird is the malacha of goizes. It's the malacha of shearing. Cutting off the end of it is the malacha of mechatech, because he's cutting it. So Rav Shimon Lakish explains what are the three malachas. Tolish chayiv mishum goizes. When he pulls the feather off the bird, then he's chayiv for goizes, for shearing. Potem chayiv mishum mechatech. When he cuts off the end of the spine, then he's chayiv for the malacha of mechatech, because he's cutting it to the exact size. And memaret chayiv mishum mechatech. And then when he pulls off the fluff, then he's chayiv for the malacha of mechatech, smoothing it, because now what happens is now that remaining spine of the feather is able to be used to be able to make, for example, hats. You can weave them together now to make hats. So therefore, and you can't have the fluff on it when you're doing that. So therefore, now you've done another malacha of mamachet.
Doesn't matter what his kavan is. I want only pillow. I don't want to make a hat from it. Doesn't matter.
Right, but Pashas, yeah, because he can use them now. Now he can use it for a hat. Yeah, I mean, the Ritva points out. If you're saying that he's using only the fluff for the pillow, then why is he chayev for smoothing out? The spine? It's a malacha shein tzuchah legufa. So he explains that what we're talking about is that you're not pulling off the fluff in order to use it for pillows. Just the opposite. You're pulling off the fluff in order to use them to make hats. So it is malacha shetzricha legufa, because he needs the fluff off in order to use the spine in order to make a hat. So therefore, he's chayav for that. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, kosher v'hamatzir, person ties or unties a knot. Then those are two malachas. So the question is, kshira b'mishkan heichavoy. Where did they have tying in the Mishkan? Omer Rava, Shekhen Koshrin, the Sedis Oyalim Koshrin. Because what happened is, Shekhen Koshrin, the Sedis Oyalim. Because what happens, we know from the Psukim that the Mishkan had pegs that were for it, because, for example, you have the curtains that are hanging up there around the Mishkan would blow in the wind. So therefore, they had ropes attached. They had ropes attached to the curtains, and then they had pegs that are stuck into the ground, where one end of the rope is tied to the peg, and the other end is tied to the curtain, and that way it keeps the curtain from flapping around in the wind. So they had to tie the ropes to the stakes, to the pegs. So the question is kosher. My whole kosher. I'm gonna ask what happened. Okay, but that's tying in order that you're soon afterwards going to untie it. And we know from later on in Armasekta that only a kesher shokayama, only a permanent knot, is also daraisa. So obviously it can't be that tying is what we're considering as one of the malachas. Ela Omar Abaya. So no, Abaya says the reason is you can over your ears to nifsikalahem nima koshrim oisa. Because what happens when you're weaving the cloth for the mishkan? What happens if one of the threads breaks? If one of the threads breaks, then they tie the two ends back together, and then that's going to stay. That's a permanent knot. Amale Rava. So Rava says kerasta kosher. Okay, then that explains the tying. Matu mai ikalamema. What are you going to say about untying? Once they tie the two torn ends together, then they're not going to untie it. So where do you have untying in the Mishkan then? The chitema. So you're going to answer like this: the mitzvami lechuti kitri bahadi adori. What happens if, let's say, you have two threads like that, one next to the other? So let's say, for example, they set out the shefi threads ahead of time. And they set out the shefi threads ahead of time and put them in the loom, which we said was the malacha of Mesach and Oisa Shnei Botimim. Now let's say, for example, when they're picking out the threads to use for that purpose, let's say they found one of the threads ripped, so they knotted in the middle. Let's say it happened, the same thing happened with another thread, and then when they line them up, they find out that those two are next to each other. So then maybe you're going to say, Shori Chad Bekotter Chad. So you're going to say maybe what they're going to do is they're going to untie one of those knots and keep the other one tied. So therefore you have untying a knot. You wouldn't do that. Hashta listening melach bosavadame nation king. You wouldn't even do that to a human king, because all the threads that were used in the Mishkan were very thick threads. Each one of them was spun from thick thinner threads. And actually what you had is really, most of them actually were 24 ply. So you have, for example, when you have the curtains, let's say with tchelas ba'agom and tchelas strani v'sheish, what you did is you have six threads of tchelas that are spun together to make a thread of tchelas, six of agom, six of tchelas strani, six of tishtan, and then they would twine all those together, and you have a 24 ply thread. So in such a thick thread, when you have a knot, it's very noticeable. So you wouldn't even do that if you're making a curtain for a human king. Would they do that for Hashem? No. If they had a situation like that, they would make sure they're not going to have two knots right next to each other. They would make sure then that if you had, let's say you wound up like that with two strings that had broken and you need to knot it in the middle, so what they would do is one of them, instead of having a knot right next to the other one, what they do is cut out a section of the one string and then they make new knots on it in two other places, one at each end. So this way, like you have a knot, they're staggered, they're not next to each other, and therefore it doesn't look so bad. So you never have where they're untying a knot, because if they found like that, they wouldn't untie the knot. They would just cut out the piece and make other knots in other places. So you still have, if you're talking about making the curtains, knotting they could do, unknotting they're not doing. By the way, Tosfos talking about the question, when we say that untying a knot is a malacha on Shabbos, does it have to be that you're untying for the sake of tying again? Now, we know with some of the malachas, it is like that. For example, we said that kereya is a manas litzvah. Ripping is a malacha only if he's doing it for the intention of that later on he's going to re-sew it. So over here, is it the same thing or not? Tosfos says, based on what we're saying over here, you're saying that you're going to untie a knot and leave the other one tied. So then in that case, you're not necessarily untying in order to tie a knot again. So he brings out from Rabbeinu Hanano, who says that maybe what it is if you have, let's say the string was broken in two places and they had to tie it. So at that point, what they do is they would untie the two knots, throw out that whole middle part, and then they just take the two ends and tie them together so you only have one knot. So therefore, it would actually be untying a knot in order to retie it.
What's about when they traveled again? They had to untie it to travel?
Well, so if we're talking about weaving the curtains, they don't have to untie it. But Rubber's problem was that, I mean, a bias problem with Rubber's explanation was, if we're talking about the ropes that are attached to the pegs, to begin with, when they tie them, it's only meant to be a short-term thing, only as long as the Mishkan is in this place. And a short-term knot, we're going to learn later on, is only Osir v'Rabbanan, or sometimes even Mutter. So it can't be we're learning from the Mishkan, because then we would say that even short-term knots are Osir. So that's why a buyer thing. We have to,
it could be short-term, but it's sometimes it lasted for 8 months. So it had to be strong for all the winter.
But it wasn't
months.
Necessarily. It could be they could park in one place for one night, and next morning they're already gone. So,
right, but since they didn't know how long they're going to be there because of the Shadda Delam beforehand, so they had to make it strong enough that just in case they're staying there for 8 months, it's got to be strong for all the winter for 8 months.
No, the Pashas, they would tie it the same strength no matter what. It's not really a matter of the strength of the knot. It's a matter of if you make the knot, if you make a professional-type knot, and you're making it that it's meant to be permanent, where you're never going to untie it, then it would be Chayav Chatos. But any knot that's not permanent, any knot that sometimes is untied, is not Osir D'Oraisa. We're going to learn in the 15th Seder that such knots can at most are only Osir D'Rabbanan. And here, whatever it is, even if they're going to stay in one place for 19 years, which they actually did, nevertheless, they're still eventually, at the end of it, they're going to be untying that knot. But to begin with, when they made that knot, they knew that that at some point in the future, tomorrow or in a week or in a month or in a year or whatever, they're going to be untying it. So that's why Abaye is saying we have to be talking about a knot that's made in the course of weaving, where once you make that knot, it's going to stay there. And sometimes, as we're saying, sometimes you untie a knot where there were knots in the weave. But again, we're saying the problem with that is that if you have two knots next to each other, you're not going to untie one of the knots, because you don't want two knots next to each other in the first place. It looks really bad. So therefore, to begin with, therefore you'd cut out that section of the thread and knot it in other places. So you're not going to be untying anything at all. Because people who are trapping the chilazin, which lives in the water, they tie ropes to make their net. And they also sometimes untie ropes from one net to put them on another. So therefore, that's why those are malachas. Because to begin with, when you put the ropes on the net, you're intending them to stay permanently. But it could happen, let's say, that you have a different net, a different shape net, or let's say this one rift or whatever, and then you need to untie the remaining ropes from it and put them on another one, and therefore you have the malacha of kosher, where you're tying something where it's intended to be permanent, and sometimes, though, you have it turns out it wasn't permanent, and you have to untie it and put it on something else. The next one about Teufel states for this, we said a person sewed two stitches. So the question is, why is a person chayav for sewing two stitches? V'holoi kaima, if you sew two stitches and don't do anything else, those are not going to last. It's going to come out on its own from the cloth very easily. So why should it be a malacha? We said before that a malacha has to be something that's going to be able to last for a long time. You're right. It would have to actually be that he ties off the end of the string. In order to keep it in place. It could even be some of the Mephoshim say even if he only ties it at one end, then that's already it might not stay forever, but at least it's going to stay longer term than it would without a knot at all. It does also say that the Rambam writes that if you do three stitches, then you don't even need to knot it anymore, and then that's already considered a malacha by itself, because three stitches already will last even without a knot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To be continued tomorrow with more malachas. Shkaya.
Shkaya. Shkaya for the wonderful day.